Thanks for tuning in. This is Matt Santos of the Mile High Show. You're listening to episode 141. I am recording this on a very, very warm Arizona Saturday morning out in Chino Valley, Arizona, my hometown, at the Chino Valley Equestrian Association grand opening. This is a nonprofit organization who is building a multi-acre, it's a big, huge facility, for equine events, horse stuff, roping, obstacle courses, training, all kinds of stuff. There, it's going to be a beautiful facility once it gets its funding situated and once construction moves forward. Right now, there's a big arena and a very, very nice trailer mobile home where I am sitting right now because it's air conditioned. It's about 100 degrees out there. And there is lots going on. I'll have a link to the facility's website and their Facebook page in the show notes. Well, here, let me find it real quick. Ah, there it is. Okay, Chino Valley Equestrian Park, a multi-use facility, is their Facebook page. Kind of long. Check them out at cvequestrianpark.com. This is, like I said, a nonprofit organization that is doing construction and setup of a very nice equine park here in Chino Valley, Arizona, where they'll be doing all kinds of events. They're raising funds for their construction, but they are up. They have a big arena out here now, a big, I don't know what you call it, an arena, I guess, where they can do some events now, some roping and some dressage, I think it's called, the kind of like the horse ballet kind of stuff, various stuff. There are all kinds of events that they can still do currently. They can start that now, but going forward, they're going to have stables. There's going to be almost like a little amphitheater kind of thing in the works. Obviously, bandstands and things like that. The seating and all kinds of fun stuff. But they're raising money for that through sponsorship and through donations. And info is at cvequestrianpark.com. And today's grand opening is just kind of kick it off. And they're going to have a few different events throughout the summer and, of course, into fall and winter because the weather up here is pretty mild in the winter months. So they'll be able to use this facility year-round. Well, to help kick off the grand opening, we have a band that's playing a couple of sets out here, the Alter Ego Band, and we are going to sit down and talk with those four folks. So stick around. Again, Alter Ego here on episode 141 of the Mile High Show. Please take a moment, if you would, and bookmark milehighshow.com. And if you would, whenever you have any online shopping to do, use that Amazon link at milehighshow.com. So bookmark, save to your desktop, save to your toolbar, wherever, milehighshow.com. Use that as your online shopping portal and do all your online Amazon shopping through that. It's a way to show support for the show. We get a little kickback from Amazon every month. And in turn, that allows us to hit the road and interview folks like Alter Ego and all the other guests. We have the local artists and musicians and entertainers and just interesting folk that we have on the Mile High Show. So please utilize that. Also, the Audible link. We get a little taste every month from them as well. If you use the code MILEHIGH at checkout, Audible, over 180,000 titles to choose from, everything from books, lectures, comedy, and Audible exclusive content as well. So you get a free audio download and a free 30-day subscription by using the code MILEHIGH at checkout. That link is right there at milehighshow.com. So please use those. We also have a little donate button on the Support Us page, Support the Show page. So please, if you can give a buck or two or three or four or more, there is no limit. We won't say no to any donation. So use that little link. You can use your little debit or credit card through PayPal and donate to help support the show. So sit back and enjoy. I know I will. I'm in air conditioning. It's 100 degrees out there in the blistering Arizona sun. Hot, Hot Weather, Hot, Hot Music with Alter Ego.
For I am a piece of mankind, and therefore never sent to know for whom the bell tolls. It tolls for thee.
Keep welcome. Going. We'll just do a literary welcome, podcast.
Welcome,
yeah.
Welcome, welcome. oh, gosh, I need my... You got that LSD or stuff?
man. Anyway. I don't think you want one of Steve's vitamins. It's vitamins the little blue pill.
Yeah.
And then you got to call a doctor if it lasts more than 6 hours.
That's right. And no more running for the shelter of your mother's little helper. Okay.
Well, thanks for sitting down, guys.
Well,
you
hi.
Ready? I'll wait. Well,
yeah.
Go ahead.
Matt, we are so
just
happy that you came around and you would actually take the time to care enough
much.
To talk to us.
We're cheating. We're cheating right now because... Here, let's get some room noise, and I'll strip it out later. Because we're sitting in a really nice air-conditioned trailer.
Yeah.
It's and then
what is it? What is it? 90? Would you say 99, Russ?
It's supposed to be 99.
Which means
probably 105.
It's 107 out here.
And then under with your gear out there and the dust blowing.
Oh,
and,
you know,
and the jumping around in the plane and the singing. 145. I'm
Fun
going
45
for.
Yeah, on
work.
The horses. There's a lot of horses out here too.
I just don't want kick up the some cleaning dust. Afterwards.
Well, I dusted myself down to the body powder and all that, so I've got about 3 pounds of library paste in my shorts right now.
Well, I actually picked up horse dew this morning, so I've got a little layer of horse manure on me. Always helps.
Oh, we know.
Oh, you've smelled it.
All right, who are we sitting with? Alter Ego.
The Alter Ego Band.
Go around the room. Just introduce yourselves. Everybody, is it vape day here? Is that?
Yeah.
Is that, oh, my goodness.
You can't smoke because it's too dry.
No, I quit smoking.
Too dry. Dry out your lungs.
Yeah.
So, Paul Wimsky, I play lead guitars and I sing a little bit.
A little bit.
There you go. That's Paul.
Just a little
bit. And I'm Steve Feller. I'm here in Chino Valley on a... sabbatical
work release is that what
work
they call
release,
it
yeah I'm actually from Tokyo, Japan. Ah, so 4 hour ready. No. You have 4 hour, you eat too much. Okay,
he's got to be in by 8 o'clock tonight.
My goodness,
so take me home.
It's a lot hotter than we thought.
I'm Steve Feller. I'm the piano player and I'm a singer, and here's Tim.
I'm Tim Paul. I'm the bass player. As you can tell, I'm not from around here. I'm from East Flat Rock, Hendersonville, North Carolina.
What did you say?
Shut up.
He said he wants some key lime pie.
If this was a video podcast, we could run the little closed captions underneath.
Tim Paul from North Carolina.
I'm Appalachian.
From
that's where the draw comes from.
And go ahead, last but not least.
Oh, I didn't know he was done.
Oh, would you like to say anymore?
Go ahead. Let him go ahead.
Go ahead.
No, I'm,
it's evidently the Steve Feller show now.
It's
nice.
It's the Steve Feller and a company, man. Next.
We'll get back to you.
I didn't ask for it.
Don't worry about it.
I didn't ask for it.
Okay, my name's Russ Hall. I play the drums. Try to play the drums. So.
And he was demonstrating that just now by waving his arms.
Well, you got to show everybody, you know.
And you know, Matt, we came here because, well, obviously, they're paying us $10,000 an hour.
Unfortunately,
but then we donate it.
Well, no, unfortunately, it's in equine center dollars.
That's right, equine center.
Kind of like when you get the casino dollars.
I know
it's
the
only
president.
Good in that building.
Yeah.
So it's here, it's only good for pizza slices and saddles.
Ooh,
yeah, they're
that
not
work.
Called dollars; they're yallers. Yallers.
So, where alter ego? Where's the name come from? Who came up with that?
Well, you know, an alter ego is somebody's alter personality, like Superman. He has an alter ego of
Clark Kent.
Clark Kent. Batman was Bruce
off,
Wayne.
Clark.
So each one of us does something in our normal lives, but then we have an alter ego, which is sort of like a rock star.
Not sort of. He's okay. Been living the dream.
Some of us
I've
are
lived the dream
rock
before.
Stars,
so Paul, what's your day gig?
So until May 31st, I was a professional air traffic controller. No, I have since retired.
No stress there.
That's why he's so stressed.
He's the sanest one of all of us.
How long have you been doing that?
I did it for 33 and a half years.
Oh, whereabouts? All here? Or?
No, started in Albuquerque, New Mexico, worked in Oklahoma, Texas, Arkansas. I worked at FAA headquarters in Washington, D.C. for almost 4 years. And here at Prescott, I was the manager of the tower.
Nice, nice. Retired?
I retired May 31st.
Nice. Yay, well, congrats.
Now he's a rock and roller.
Congrats. So music full-time now, or what's your other?
Yeah, pretty much. I'm a retiree as my mild-mannered self. And then I'm the rock star as my alter ego.
Honeydew.
Well, I get it. I get
musician.
It. So my alter ego is I like to think of myself, I'm outstanding in my own field.
A field
and
of
I have 7 acres, so I really have the room now to outstand.
A field of one.
He plays it, they come, you know.
Hey. But I love these guys. I really do. I came out to Arizona 7 years ago. I do have a band in Los Angeles where I'm from, and I've done a lot in Los Angeles. It's so funny. I walk in a store in Los Angeles, and I know someone, and I walk into a store here, and they look at me like, what? Who's that? So I'd say my alter ego is rock star / poop picker upper. Thank you very much. And tractor driver.
Well, hit the other band. Plug away.
The other band is, that's okay. We don't need to go there right now. Yeah. Little Elmo and the Cosmos. I've been in it 45 years. Great band. I make at least $4 an hour. It's great.
I think you make a little more than
Talk about pay to play. That's what I do.
Yeah, but and you guys have been playing casinos and stuff for a lot of years.
About 40 years.
Yeah. Describe that band, Little Elmo. We want to cover everything.
Classic
all
rock show band. Classic rock show band that doesn't make any money.
No. But a lot of fun.
It's a lot of fun, but I got to say that since I've been with these guys, my fun is here. My fun is with these guys. We really gel. We really like each other.
We rub each other the wrong way sometimes.
And then we have love-hate. Yeah. Everyone has love-hate. Look at Slash and what's his name from...
And what are you guys playing through Alter Ego? What genre?
I'd say classics, but more the 70s and 80s.
Yeah.
And maybe a little 90s. But we go for the songs we love to play. You know, love them, they'll love them.
How long you guys been playing together? Fairly recent, huh?
Yeah, about a year maybe.
A year-ish?
About a year, yeah. Last October was our actual coming out of practicing.
Right.
And we had a big, huge barbecue.
Right. There was a contest at the Cliff Castle Casino in Camp Verde, so we said, let's go do it for the heck of it. And
that was our first gig.
And we actually won. We're one of the three winners, and we'll be there on October 6th and 7th, and they're actually, there's four of us, so let's say 1, 2, 3, 4. I make money! Instead of 20 people, there's four. Anyway, we'll be at the Cliff Castle Casino. If you come out and check us out, we guarantee you'll have a good time with us, because have a good time with you.
What is it, 9 to
something
1?
Like, yeah.
1:30?
Night casino hours.
Yeah.
And what's your day gig?
Speak English.
Y'all.
Finish up with your bio, since you were so rudely interrupted by the Manning Green.
Thing, yeah.
The man Manning Green.
His thing. I've played a very long time. Bass is all I've ever wanted to do. You see a lot of bass players that are recycled guitar players. Yeah. That just wasn't quite good enough to hit the guitar scene, so they played bass. Bass is all I've ever played.
Why?
I love the sound. I love the frequency. I love the tone.
He likes to be vibrated.
Yeah. I like the vibration. Yeah. I've done it.
Do you sit on your amp when you're playing?
I've done it.
It's a family show, guys. Jeez.
Okay, sorry.
I've been in Arizona probably 2 years now.
Really? And where are you from again?
North Carolina.
North Carolina. Yeah. So was that always North Carolina?
Yeah. Up and down. Did that gig for a good many years.
Yeah.
And just decided to retire and just wound up here. And then I was here probably a year goofing around a little bit and decided I wanted to play again because I like to play.
Always rock?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. A little bit of country. I like my rock now. You can tell by the hair. I like my rock.
You got to see one of the bass cabinets he has. It's like a house.
How many do you got?
Bass cabinets?
No, basses.
Eight or nine. Yeah, I pick them up over the years, you know. And at the time, they were number one, and then they just got moved down, you know. And the main ones I play now is I've got a Gibson RD Artist and the Sarzo, the Peavey, and a custom shop. BC Rich, American made. One of the last years they come out with that, custom made. It's called Warship. Man, it's a pretty nice piece. It's 101. I'm really proud of that one. And go to Russ.
Russ likes to talk. What have you been doing? We used to work together a while back.
Yeah, I used to build bicycles at Walmart. Yeah. That's why you
terrorizing
don't see too many
children.
Bicycles around. You know?
See a lot of kids in casts and missing teeth.
Yeah.
What are you doing now?
Right now, I just kind of partially retired.
Yeah.
Do handyman work here and there, gardening, stuff like that.
Nice. Well, how long have you been drumming?
Since I was 11.
Really?
Yeah. The first time, this was funny, because my brother was in a band, and they would come over and practice all the time. And the drummer that they had was buying a new set. And I was playing my mom's Tupperware bowls and stuff in the kitchen. And then I didn't know it, but they ended up buying his old set from the drummer in my brother's band. And then I walked into the house one day after school, and the drum set was set up in the living room. And I thought they were going to practice in the living room. And then my mom and dad were there and said, "This is yours." And I just about fell over.
Ah.
It was pretty cool. I got it like 10 and a half years old, and then started playing them in the garage. And my brother one time walked in with a cassette tape, and this was in the 70s. And he tosses this cassette tape to me, and he says, "You want to impress me?" And I said, "Well, I want to eventually play in your guys' band." And when he tossed it to me, he said, "Learn this." So I played this tape for months and months. And one time he came in after work, and I was playing it, and he recognized it. And I told him, I said, "Well, how am I doing?" And he says, "Is that the tape I gave you?" And I said, "Yeah." I said, "But there's some parts in there that I can't figure out how he's doing it." And he says, "Well, you'll never get it." And I looked at him, and I says, "Why is that?" He says, "Because it's the Allman Brothers, and they have two drummers." So I about, you know, about killed him, threw my drumstick at him.
You guys got to go on?
So I just want to tell you that, you know, I started when I was, I was still in my mother's womb, and I started dancing because when I was 9 years old, my father came and said, "We're going to go to an audition in New York City, and don't get excited because, you know, it probably won't happen." And the next thing I knew, I was on Ted Mack Amateur Hour three times when I was 9, 10, and 11 years old. And it was kind of cool. And you can go on YouTube and see my little Stevie Feller from Union, New Jersey. "Oh, that lucky old son." That's what I sounded like. But that, and I did a show called Fantasy on television every day. It was called Fantasy, and they would act out people's fantasies. It was Peter Marshall and Lester Buggins.
Pay-per-view?
No. It was on Channel 4 every day. And I wrote a song called Fantasy Bound. The show was called Fantasy. So I got to go on and sing nationally on the television.
Oh, cool.
Singing Fantasy Bound, which is another one of my songs.
Well, what we're here for today is the Chino Valley Equestrian Association. Am I getting it wrong?
Yeah, where Chino Valley Equestrian Association.
I'll just read your shirt. You got no nothing on there, and they're doing their grand opening in Chino Valley. There's lots of stuff going on. It looks like you guys are going on a little earlier than we thought.
A little bit earlier.
Let's break. We'll come back after your set.
And then don't forget 4th of July. Yeah. We actually auditioned for the town of Chino Valley and got the job.
Let's
anyways,
let's cut that way you don't get chewed out, and we can pop back after your first set.
Fantastic.
Okay, cool.
Cut.
Alter Ego and Matt out.
Oh, and where do they find you?
They find me in the penitentiary.
Website, for the day. Facebook, what's the best way?
Oh, you can find us at alterego.com. What is it? alterego.com. band Biz.
Cool.
Thank you. And
well,
Facebook.
Let's go listen to some music and we'll come back.
Thanks, man.
Now, Russ, you were talking about when you started playing as a kid. What was the first band you were in?
It was my brother's band. It was called the Country Vibrations. I was like 12.
Was the bass player sitting on his amp? Is that what?
Yeah, it was my brother too. So he kind of plays just like him.
So what? So. We country music or?
Yeah, it was. Well, it was oldies, country music, and then some modern stuff.
Where'd you grow up?
Grew up in California, Whittier, California.
Not a mecca for country.
No, but we went everywhere. So what we would kind of do, what we would kind of do is we play like a few country songs.
Yeah,
and then see what would happen with the crowd, and then we throw in some oldies.
Yeah.
And then kind of
now what
figure
were you
out what the
what
crowd
were you playing?
Wants.
Where were you guys playing? When the you say the crowds, what?
Well,
what
the first gig we did was it was a benefit for some people that were killed on an oil derrick.
Oh, wow.
For the Texaco. And it was a big, like, park setting and everything. And I didn't even know. My brother asked me the day before, you're playing drums.
And how old were you?
I was 11. And I'm like, I don't think I'm ready. He says, oh, yeah, you're ready. So we did it and pulled it off. So
nice.
We had actually two drum sets up there.
Now, how old was the rest of the band?
My brother was, like, in his 20s.
Oh, there's a pretty good gap.
Yeah. And the lead guitar player, he played like rhythm and lead like Paul does. And he was in his 50s at that time. The guy was phenomenal. So
you're playing with a band and you're not even a teenager yet,
nope.
Huh?
I wasn't even getting paid. I was just playing because I wanted to
play.
So
were you cheap labor? Is that why they had you on? Or were
probably.
You actually gigging pretty good? Were you playing pretty well?
After, I think it was three gigs we did, then I was permanent. Ended up leaving my drum set at home and then using the other drummers because his was all new.
Gotcha.
And sounded better. And then I started getting paid then, and I was 12 or 13 at that time.
Now, how long did you play with them?
Oh, probably about 5 years.
Really?
Yeah.
All around Southern Cal?
Yep.
Yeah?
Yep. Norco, Riverside, Ontario, Norwalk, Long Beach, Huntington Beach. Played a couple places in Huntington Beach.
Nice.
It was fun. I had a ball.
Now, what kind of gigs were you playing? When did you start, Tim?
Oh, Lord. It's been, I wish I could tell you something dramatic and informative, but a lot of it's a haze. I'm sorry.
That's the best
people,
stories now.
Yeah. I still have people come, but not here, thank God, because I ain't been here that long, but. If I go back to the East Coast to play for a little bit, people come up and they go, hey, man, I ain't seen you in a while. How you doing? I'm like, I'm okay, man. How are you? And I worry about the whole rest of the day. Who was that? You know?
I'm like that at my family reunions.
I'm ashamed to admit it, but I did a lot of substances back then and got clean. Yeah, believe it or not. You know what I mean? And it was a lot of fun. I remember parts of it.
You were gigging the whole time? I mean, music has been your...
Yeah, I've been playing... since about 16 or 17.
Man.
Yeah. And did a bunch of gigs, bunch of bands.
What kind of bands?
Of music. A lot of it was rock, a couple country groups. Usually much pretty whatever paid, you know?
Yeah.
Because I did a little bit of session work, stuff like that. And it was a lot of fun. I mean, the session work isn't as fun as people make it out to be just because you go in there, you do your crap, and you get out.
Yeah.
There's no dilly-dallying. You know, they pay you, and if
who are you playing with?
Band-wise?
Yeah. Anybody of note or regional folks or what?
Yeah, regional. They was, let's see, Altar, Trinity, Sound Slave, Stella Kid, Jester's Court, a bunch of them. Christy Lynn Band. Lord, I can't remember all of them now.
Sounds like all hard stuff.
It does.
Well, Christy Lynn was country, though. She was,
really?
She was country. Yeah. Good voice, good girl. And I mean, it's been a lot of fun. I've seen a lot of things I wouldn't have seen otherwise, you know.
Yeah.
Some good and some bad.
So what are some for both you guys, and we'll get to Steve a little bit. He's over there trying to be a fashion plate.
Yeah, he's winding up.
I usually, because I interview a lot of bands, and one of the questions I always ask is you know, who's the troublemaker? Who's the knucklehead in the group?
Russ.
I was going to say I don't even have to guess in this one because it's Steve, but it's Russ.
Yeah. Yeah, it got pretty heated up this morning.
All good.
Yeah,
it's all fine.
Now,
brush the sweat off. And
Right. Now ask who's the calming force.
I can tell that. Man under pressure. I want to hear a little bit more about the air traffic controller. Why would? Please don't take this the wrong way, but why would you ever choose that as a career path?
Well, before we go there, you want to hear how I got started?
Yeah,
mine's a little different. I was 9 years old. My sister, who's 11 years older than me, took me to a three-day-long rock concert in 1970 called Wright Stock. It was a copy of Woodstock at Wright State University outside of Dayton, Ohio. I saw a lot of things a nine-year-old should not see, and I got hooked on rock music. I went home, told my parents I wanted a guitar. My brother, who's 4 years older than me, also went to this concert, and my dad bought me this plastic guitar. Had nylon strings, you know, it wasn't a real guitar, of course, but I was wailing on it. My brother and I were fighting over it, and he swung it and broke it over my head. Well, then my dad decided we should probably have a real guitar. So he went to
something
this,
with a little weight so that it won't
so
break,
it
break, you
my
will.
Head. So he went and he bought us this cheap red electric guitar, cheap Japanese thing. And we played it, and we fought over it and fought over it. And he said, okay, I'm going to give you guys a contest. After 1 week, whoever can play better, I'm going to buy them a new guitar. The other one gets to keep this one. Well, my four-year older-than-me brother kicked my butt. He got the new guitar. I got the old guitar. And we began playing. I played in a couple of church groups in 1970, 71, 72. We had folk music in my church. And I played in those church groups as a kid. Yeah, you're quite the prankster there, aren't you?
Fits you good, Steve.
And quit doing that in about 1972, but I was also in a garage band, which actually had no name. We were so bad, we didn't even have a name. We had a lot of groupies that would come by and, you know, clap for us in the garage. But we
And how old were you then?
I was 11.
Now, what are groupies like for an 11-year-old
like
in a band?
They're like 10 and 9 years old. So we never even got a gig at the junior high. That's how bad we were. So I kind of quit playing guitar in about, 75 or so. And I didn't really pick one up again until my son was in middle school and he got in the string band. He tried off these different instruments and he decided he wanted to play guitar. So I said, hey, I know how to play guitar. I'll show him how to play guitar. So I started picking it up again in about 2007 or so and just started playing more and more and more. And one day my chiropractor said, hey, I'm playing with these guys and they need a guitar player. You want to come play with them? I told her, I'm no good. She says, well, that's okay. Come play anyway. So I came over, played with Steve and the other band, and I was totally shocked when they asked me to come back the following week. And that's when I met Steve.
You were the best thing in that band.
In February 2013, and Steve and I have kind of been playing ever since.
Yeah, because, you know, Paul came into the thing, and I had called you, and I said, Paul, would you like to join a band? And you said, I haven't played in a long time. And I said, well, don't worry about it.
Because I'm no good.
And I said, neither are we.
That's right.
And I said, it's not about how good we are. It's really about the fun.
That was just 2013. How old was I then?
No.
I'm not going to tell you.
You said I heard 13, so I thought.
So I've been playing with Steve, not playing with Steve, playing guitar with Steve for 4 years now.
Right. And then we met Russ, and we started, and I met you over at Dennis, over at that other place, and I thought, wow, what a great set of guys. We should do this. And it's turned.
So we just
going
started jamming.
This is like our second gig. We have to get the rough edges out, but everybody here needs to know that it's good. It's gonna get better.
Yeah.
And we have a brand new mixing console, which is the modern thing where it's all wireless and this and that. But it's not fail safe. It's gonna take a few for us to get good at
and
it.
And then you've got decades each of you playing, or at least. You know,
close enough.
Well, because it sounds like you took a little break, but
you started
young and were playing.
Yes, I did. 1970.
So it's a matter of finding how everything fits together, and
like Steve was saying before, he says what gives us our sound is our individuality, and how each of us have grown up playing different types of music. Well, and then when we came to get... Go ahead. You said it. So
we listen to each other.
Yeah.
So important. You got to hear. You put yourself with the other guy, it's going to be great.
Yeah.
You don't listen to him, forget about it. Then, well, it's mishmash.
I've talked with some bands, and I've seen a lot playing on the row in that, where they all have their own personalities. Unfortunately, they're all playing different songs while they're on stage together.
Everybody wants to be a rock star. Yeah. Bass player probably wants to be a lead guitarist, which is what Tim was telling you, which is great about Tim. He doesn't want to play guitar.
A song full of stuff.
He doesn't want to play the guitar. He's playing the one and three. Guitar player plays a two and a four.
Now, Steve, you've been playing on stage for a long time.
Yes.
Decade, probably, since before most of us were born.
I was in diapers.
I started... 1961.
I wasn't even born yet.
And I was out playing Acid Queen. I had an Ampeg B-15 amp. Now, this is the amp that was a piggyback that you could turn inside.
Yeah.
Well, it fit a six-pack of beer in there. Perfect. So we go play the high school, the preteen dance, and we'd have a six-pack in there. We'd get all, you know, one beer and you're gone. Yeah. But
so
it was fun.
I am now, one beer.
Lots of stage time amongst you. Tim, if you could remember, give me some bad gigs. What's like the worst gig?
If you remember, you weren't really there.
Well, the one that stands out in my mind is, you know, I can't really remember the name of the band right now, but I told these guys this a while back. It was like an outdoor gig, kind of like what's going on now, but. The first time I went out, the first day, there was a couple hundred people there, you know. And it was okay. It was all right. And I had a good time. And, you know, I really wasn't warmed up to the whole thing. So the next night we come back, and there was several thousand people
there. Oh, wow.
So I'm looking out across the stage. And the first thing I did is I get off, walk around backstage, and throw up. Go climb back on stage. I wasn't ready to see that many people. And... it's a lot of fun, though, man. I mean, I've had some – there's always something good out every time you play. You pick up something. And I've always been of the mind, you can learn anything from anybody, you know. Level of professionalism don't count. Level of skill don't count. There's always something somebody can teach you. So I'm always listening, you know.
Russ, what's some of the – any bad gigs stick out in your mind? Any?
Yeah, the Tamale Festival in Norwalk. Riverside. Yeah.
The Lake Paris Fair, that's something.
Really? I've never played there, but I've been at Lake Paris, yeah.
So what happened at the Tamale Festival?
Basically, everybody but my brother got sick on tamales. Somebody was serving some chicken tamales that weren't right, and about a half an hour after we ate them, we were done. My brother's up there with the bass guitar, boom, 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 and we're all going puking.
Which brings me to, if you don't mind, real quick, my most memorable time, I think, was at Coronado Island down in San Diego. We were playing for a beautiful function, very, very, high, you know, very high,
ritzy,
high echelon,
and
They bring us, in my rider, it always says deli platter or whatever the guests are eating.
Yeah.
Because we have to eat. I'm sorry. And so they brought us a deli platter, and we all ate. And guess what was wrong with the mayo? Homemade mayo, but it might have been a little. Every one of us came down with poisoning, threw our guts up for days. Yeah. I got a better one.
I'm
in Atlantic City playing at Harrah's Marina. Me and my sax player decide we're going to go deep sea fishing. We don't know nothing about deep sea fishing in the Atlantic Ocean, so we went and had breakfast. I remember the summer sausage very well, because when we got out...
Got to taste it a few times.
A few times. I was in a fetal position in the hull of the ship, waiting for them to go back home. Oh, please, I'm going to die. It was not good.
Steve. Okay, up.
I was green. I was literally a green guy.
Okay, man. He's probably as green as a shirt.
Some best ones. What are some, and for anybody, do you have a preference doing in front of a few thousand or like a small bar gig?
Stage.
Yeah, it's always fun. I mean, my best gig, one of my bands headlined we played Hot August Nights in Reno, Nevada, 22 years in a row. And one year they gave us the headline spot, and I remember it was very, my dad had passed a few years before that in 88, and it was so loud that I felt like, I looked up and I said, he's got to hear this up in heaven, because it was, you know, when you're the headliner, it's so much more powerful than when you're the opening guys. Yeah. That was my best one.
Tim, you were saying as far as the size of the crowd doesn't really...
No, it's stage is a stage, yeah, man. Because a lot of times, especially if you're playing at night, I mean, I don't know how the other guys do, but you can't really see nothing out from about 10 or 15 feet. I mean, you know, it's just dark and shadow. You can see stuff moving. That's an it. So, I mean, they see all the, yeah, but you can't see crap.
Yeah.
You know, you're just guessing.
Once in a while, you'll catch an arm that reflects in the light.
Yeah, and that's about it.
You got it.
But it's been a lot of fun.
Okay, now we can talk about Steve.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Start a book on that.
I want to hear a little bit about that air traffic controlling. How did that come about?
So in 1981, a bunch of controllers were fired. You might remember that by President Reagan. I was working as a mechanic in Tucson, and I saw in the newspaper an ad that said the FAA needs air traffic controllers. Well, I couldn't even spell air traffic controller at the time, and I was reading about it. It said that, you know, the job is a 40-hour-a-week job. You work inside an air-conditioned room. You normally sit behind a radar scope. You get 2 weeks of vacation your first year. You get, you know, $50,000 a year pay. And I thought, dang, that sounds pretty good. I was making about $20,000 a year working 11-hour days. It was hot in the summer, cold in the winter.
Wrenching.
So I went downtown and took the test. I got a 92.5. A couple of weeks later, I got a message in the mail said, sorry, you are not hired because you don't have enough general work experience. I thought, okay. Thought nothing of it. About a year later, I see pretty much the identical ad in the newspaper. I go down, take the test again. I get a 92.5. But this time on my application, I put in some volunteer search and rescue experience that I'd had. And quickly after that, I got a call. Said, hey, we're willing to hire you. You want to go work in Albuquerque, New Mexico? Didn't know much about Albuquerque, but I said, I'm willing to try. They said, okay, in 2 weeks, you need to be in Oklahoma City. It was a pretty big shock. So I had to put in my 2 weeks' notice, pack up all my stuff that I had, drive to Oklahoma City. It was pretty scary. But I made it through the academy, which had about a 60% failure rate at the time. Got assigned the en route air traffic control center in Albuquerque, New Mexico, and started working there. I've been to about six different facilities since then, headquarters and all that. It's quite the exciting job.
I don't, and again, not knowing a whole lot about the industry, but, you know, it's depicted in movies and things. The stress level, it was listed as one of the most stressful jobs in the world. That's what led up to that 81 firing, was they were going to go on strike, wasn't it?
Because they did go on strike, yes.
And federal said, nope, sorry, no striking, you're gone.
Well, yeah, you actually when you get hired by the federal government, you sign a no strike clause in your agreement. So they all were violating the law when they went on strike. So that's why they got fired, really.
So is it as a stressful atmosphere as depicted in fiction?
I will say it can be.
Yeah.
A lot of people describe it as hours of boredom sparked by moments of sheer terror. And when you have...
That's how my wife describes our marriage.
There you go. When you have a situation going on where a pilot's in distress, it's extremely stressful at that point. When you have more airplanes than you're really able to handle on your radar scope or in the sky around your tower, it's very stressful at those points. Normally, it's just a kind of a routine job. You know, you're doing one thing right after the other, and you have to think quick and you have to make quick decisions, but it's those occasions when it gets very stressful.
Any of those occasions come to mind? Anything that you
can
share?
Oh, I have a
share?
Number of them. Like when I was working one time and a guy says, mayday, 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 I'm going down. I had to quickly find out where he was, describe to him an old airport that had been turned into a drag strip, and that there had been a cable stretched across the end of the runway to catch a hook on the cars to stop them, that he needed to try to stop before he got to it. And he made it to that airport with no engine, landed on that old drag strip, stopped the airplane and turned it off the runway quick enough to avoid the cable, called later to thank us for saving his life.
Wow. What
that
kind
was,
of plane?
I don't really remember.
It was a small
Cessna. Yeah, okay. It was a small, two people in it. You know, so things like that. And he was very thankful. I've had others where the pilot loses all their instrumentation and you need to give them turns without having a heading indicator in the airplane. You just watch the airplane turn on the radar. You tell them to stop the turn, start the turn. You tell them to descend. Tell them when to stop descending. You get them down through clouds and things
kinda
like that.
Kind of like the movie Airport.
Yeah,
yeah, kind of like, except no inflatable dolls.
That was Airplane.
Yeah.
Airplane, right. So, yeah, it can be very stressful. I've got a lot of situations I could, you know.
Give me a couple, yeah.
Well.
Since Tim doesn't remember anything that happened to him on stage.
Okay, so I had
I
an interesting one.
Now, but I forget it.
I was working at Amarillo, Texas, which has a 13,000-foot-long runway built for B-52s.
Okay.
I had a T-38, which is like a fighter jet, except it's used for training, doesn't have any armament on it, that was departing from the far end of the runway, which you couldn't even see unless you had binoculars. I cleared that T-38 for takeoff, and I was scanning the runway, and I looked midfield, and I saw a Beechcraft Bonanza, single-engine, four-six-place airplane, start to enter the runway with this T-38 jet rolling right at him. I saw him and tried to call his identification out. He didn't answer me. So when he finally got airborne, I just keyed up with his call sign, told him to make an immediate right turn, told the T-38 to turn left. T-38 never saw the Bonanza. Bonanzas never saw the T-38, and they barely missed. It ends up that the Bonanza was listening on my frequency but talking on another frequency, which is kind of unusual that you can connect your radio up that way. But the older radios could do that. Anyway, T-38 almost ate that Bonanza. That was a little bit scary.
It's like a traffic cop with really, really, really big cars.
Kind of like. I had another one where I was working at Little Rock, Arkansas at nighttime. We were working the inbound rush from a football game up in Fayetteville, so all the airplanes come back from the football game at the same time. I had another smaller craft. It was probably a Cessna. Cleared to land on the north-south runway, and I saw him descend and thought I saw him land, and then I saw no more lights. So he was supposed to do a touch-and-go, and couldn't see him, so I thought maybe he hit the hills, which are right off the end of the runway. So we got the people at the work at the airport out looking for the airplane. They drove all over, couldn't find him on the runway, taxiways, hangars, or anything.
Yeah.
15 minutes later, after we had basically sterilized that runway from anybody else using it, the pilot called, said he lost all of his electrical when he was taking off on his touch and go, which was why his lights went out. He turned right, went up to the North Little Rock Airport, 8 miles north, landed, and then called us on the phone.
Huh.
So, you know, my heart was beating a little fast for those times.
You've been witness to any actual crashes?
Unfortunately, yes.
Yeah. Big ones or?
I worked four fatal crashes at Prescott in the 14 years I was there. Not as the controller working, but as the manager. So I have to get involved as the manager in all the details and who did what, why, when, how.
How long were you at Prescott?
14 and a half years.
Were you there when Swayze locked
up? No, that was before me.
Okay.
I heard about that, though, when he landed in Prescott Valley.
Yeah.
And he was
in
a
field.
Bit drunk. Yeah.
Yeah. A buddy of mine was working for the paper out and rolled up on scene doing pictures of it. And as soon as he realized who it was, immediately shot back and
I'm sure.
Hit the wire. Yeah.
Were you there when that fire plane dropped his load on Willow Creek right there by the Circle K?
Absolutely.
I don't remember that one.
Yeah,
was that?
My truck was covered with that red stuff.
I was also there a couple of minutes later when we had a fatal accident right after that.
Ooh.
It was a bad day.
Nasty. I grew up in the San Francisco Bay Area, like between Oakland and San Jose, and there was a fairly good size, for a long time it was listed as like the, anyway, it was a good size airport, but it was for smaller planes and stuff in Hayward, and it was across the main drag from a shopping mall, and on a couple of different occasions, I remember two specific, I was working for a newspaper out there, and he always had the scanners plugged in. And two separate planes, within about a year of each other, mistook the main drag for the runway and came in and just got tangled up and took down wires and everything. One of them, as it was coming in, flipped over, and I got there just before the fire trucks. And the guy got out. He was crawling out. I'm taking pictures of him crawling out. Another one, they nobody made it. I think there was two people. I was living up in Concord, east of Oakland, And same thing, big shopping mall, and the guy mistook. This was a big one because it was in shopping was going on. It was like Christmas season, and the lights on the roof of the mall, the guy mistook for the runway and went through the roof of the mall and took out a bunch of folks. But yeah, it was pretty ugly. That's the thing about, you know, your car breaks down, you coast to the side. I don't know how I would. I don't think I could have done that job just that.
Yeah, you that can't get out level. And just park.
Yeah.
I think, I mean, some of the stuff that he's told us about the airplanes and everything, I bet you the guys that are like in the big main hubs and stuff that handle all the worldwide traffic and stuff, there'd be no way I could handle that.
Yeah.
No
way.
They
actually have less stuff going on than the smaller airports like we do.
Because really?
They're dealing with professional pilots,
yeah,
and professionally maintained airplanes,
yeah,
and flight routes that are kind of set
than we do. The smaller airports have a lot more.
Yeah.
Wow.
Now, I worked with a guy for a little bit, and he had graduated Embry-Riddle and was waiting on a job from Lockheed, and so he took the job where I was working, and we worked together for a few months, and then he went over. I think he's still over at Lockheed. Does something with the what do they do over there in PV and Lockheed? It's something to do with, like, the weather control.
It's called a flight service station.
Yeah.
That's where they do flight planning for pilots. They provide weather briefings. They file flight plans. They do things like that.
Did you work with those folks?
Yes.
Much at all? Did you know the staff over there?
I did. When it was FAA,
okay,
they were in the same compound as us. The parking lots are connected. And so I knew most of the people at the flight service station.
Because I met this guy when we started working together. We got hired the same day. And I didn't know much about his background. And then when he quit, he's telling me where he's going. It's a few months after we started. And the first thought I had, great guy, hilarious, funny guy. But I said, you're going to be involved in, like, how safe planes are? He goes, oh, yeah. All I could think of was, oh, those poor pilots. But Casey Ballard. Do you know Casey?
No.
Good guy, not solid right. guy, but just not when you picture somebody responsible for lives and millions of dollars of equipment. That was not the face that pops into your mind. So what's
you're
next?
You're gonna do what?
Yeah. So what's next for you guys? You got 4th of July coming up. This is going up tonight. Yep. So you got 4th of July for the town over at Community Center Park.
Yeah.
On Tuesday the 4th.
We got what a private.
We got a private gig on the 23rd of September.
Yeah, right. Birthday party.
Birthday party for
some people.
Some guy.
Somebody.
And just meeting every day, Yellow Brick Road, and gigging and practicing.
Get playing on Yellow Brick Road.
Yeah. You got that song in your set list yet?
No.
We don't do any Elton John.
No. Goodbye, right. Yellow Brick Road.
Oh, it sounds like you might have to add it there.
I wanted to add some Elton John, but Steve was like, yeah, maybe not.
Yeah.
There's a lot involved with his music. It's not just keyboards, guitars, and drums. I mean, there's a lot involved with it. So.
Well, look forward to hearing you on this second set, which is going to be, what, about a half hour, 45 or so, I think.
Jonah.
We're going to plug in, pull a little music off the board to use as our intro and outro, and maybe drop it in when we did our break a little bit ago. Want to thank you guys for sitting down. It's been a lot of fun. Thank you for coming out here and playing for the Chino Valley Equestrian Park.
Thanks for having us.
And again, hit where folks can get in touch with you and find out about booking you.
Website is www.alteregoband, all one word, .biz, biz. And then you can go to Facebook / Alter Ego Band. It might be Alter Ego Band AZ.
AZ, yes.
I think
it has
AZ.
The AZ on it.
But, yeah, we're both Facebook and the web. We don't do Twitter or anything
we're
like
modern.
That yet.
Good deal.
I'm not a Twitter.
We're modern.
We don't.
I've been called...
Not that
some
modern.
Bad
not
things,
modern.
But I don't Twitter, so yeah. I'm not
right.
a tweeter.
Well, thanks, guys. We'll go out there and listen to some music.
Thanks. We'll see you
and
out there.
Maybe right. Steve's out there. I think he's just out there, son.
He's
out there working on his bronze.
Next singing youngster, he's an 11-year-old sixth grader from Union, New Jersey. This is Stephen Feller. Stephen, I see on your application you want to be a veterinarian when you grow up. Have you got pets at home?
Yes. I have a dog and two hamsters, and just a few days ago, one of my hamsters had 9 babies.
Is that right? Well, congratulations. You can give out the cigars right after you sing. Y'all ready to sing for us? Okay, Lloyd, take it away.
Sweat till I'm ready.